Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 11:32 a.m. and that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is February 26th. I'm recording a little early because I'm about to jump on a plane to Dubai, and that will also upset the schedule for posting comment of the day over the course of the next few days, but I will be posting every day, and I will probably get the big picture long term video done on Saturday morning rather than trying to get it done without having seen the market on Friday, but I'll cross that bridge when I come to it. What I wanted to primarily talk about today were three things. One is what's happening in China, where there is a move from single party government to single person government, and that concentration of power in one hand has actually looked on the market. If we look at the Hang Seng, it's up 231 points, taking its cue from Wall Street, but and people are thinking about this as it's going to ensure that there's stability, but it may ensure stability in the short term. It raises the specter of instability in the medium to longer term. So there's a very simple question. If governance is everything in markets, and we have a move like this, then it has to be concluded that this is a retrograde step in terms of governance. If that is indeed the case, then we have to think of China as having an additional risk premium going forward. That doesn't mean that the price is going to decline, but rather that a higher return should be demanded for participating in the market. Now, the Hang Seng has bounced from the region of the trend mean in line with the vast majority of other stock markets. When we look at, for example, the H shares index, then it has been rallying in a similar manner following finding support in the region of the trend mean, and when we look at it on a decade-long basis, it's encountered resistance in the region of 14,000 on multiple occasions. So this does look like it's a consolidation in the region of previous peaks rather than an outright reversal of the bullish trend that's been in evidence since the beginning of 2016. Well, given the background of almost synchronized global economic expansion, then the likelihood is that asset prices will continue to advance here. And a bull market papers over a lot of cracks, and it's probably not until after the bull market peaks that some of the issues that people are worried about will come to fruition. Then when we look at the S&P 500, it has pushed up and out of this short-term range in here today. This remains a powerful rebound from the short-term oversold condition we saw at the beginning of the month, but I think that medium-term, the most likely prospect is for ranging, and that range could be potentially volatile, but so far we're still in the rebound phase. And the reality is, for example, when you look at Warren Buffett's letter to shareholders, that changes to the GAAP rules will flatter the holdings or the earnings of companies like Berkshire Hathaway and indeed the banks as well. And when you are in an environment where you have a fiscal stimulus underway, well, then that represents a tailwind to asset prices over the medium term. But the busting of the VIX, the short VIX trade over the course of the last few weeks, what that at least suggests to me is that we're in for a somewhat more volatile period over the course of the next few months. And in fact, back when we had the last similar spike in 2015, then volatility came back down, then it went back up again. And it took the better part of 6 months for volatility to settle down in a sustained manner after that. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if that's what we get on this particular occasion as well. But because Wall Street is rallying, then that's also acting as a bit of a tailwind to the rest of Europe as well. And the FTSE 100 is pressuring the upper side of its short-term range, but it wasn't quite able to hold it in here towards the close today. When you look at the pound, it has been largely range-bound over the course of the last month against the US dollar, but perhaps the more important point is that there's a clear upward bias over the last 15 months, perhaps more than that, in fact. And as long as it is holding the region of the trend mean, then we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. That's as much a story of the dollar's weakness as it is of the pound's recovery. Perhaps a better picture of what's going on with the pound would be to compare it to the euro. And I'm just going to put that up with the just showing it the other way around, so that we can see very clearly that the pound has been in an inert range against the euro for more than 6 months already, and it's currently at 113.45. If it can sustain a move above 114, well, then we can conclude that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. This is still a very liquid environment in terms of the political environment in the UK, and exactly what happens and how they eventually come to some agreement with how to deal with their closest neighbours is still very much up in the air. And there is a battle going on between realpolitik and practicality versus idealism. And eventually one is going to triumph over the other, and we'll get a breakout. And quite which way that goes, I think that the most likely scenario is a negotiated settlement, where the UK probably ends up closer to the EU than a lot of the people who voted to leave are going to be particularly happy with. But I think that despite the fact that personally I wouldn't be happy with that situation, I think it is still the most likely situation. Then the other thing that I wanted to talk about was the agricultural commodities, because when we look at an increasing number of them, what we're presented with are base formations. Corn, for example, is firming within its base, and wheat is doing the same thing, and soybeans has been firming for much of the last 3 or 4 weeks. So that covers the grains and beans, and then if you look at cotton, you get a similar situation. Then when you look at gold over the course of the last 4 years, then you're presented with this rounding characteristic. In fact, if you were to just pull out any old technical textbook, and you'd see a saucer that you had a very clear downward bias until 2016, and now you've got a mild upward bias, but so far $1,400 continues to hold. And this has so far been a pretty I think inert a period of ranging over the course of the last couple of months when we look at it on the basis of this 10-year chart. And what that says to me is that this is a base formation, and that the most likely scenario is that we are going to see gold breaking higher at some point later this year. And that is equally true of the broader commodity complex, that despite the fact that oil prices have been rallying for a while now, and so have the industrial metals, the rest of the commodity complex has been moribund. But again, we have this very inert range going on for more than 18 months already, and prices are coming back up towards the upper side of that range now, and we're seeing increasing evidence that some of the base formations in the commodity complex could be resolved on the upside. And against that background, we have people starting to talk about the return of inflation. Well, so far they're talking about the return of inflation, but we don't have a great deal of evidence that it is becoming a significant problem. And yields did race to get up to the 3% level on on the US 10-year, so we could get some pause and consolidation in here over the course of the next few weeks. And certainly there's been a loss of momentum over February to date. Nonetheless, the most likely scenario is that this range is going to be resolved with an upward break, and that we are going to have somewhat higher inflation overall. Well, one thing that I think is really worth keeping to the back of one's mind is when we look at, for example, what's going on in Venezuela. And if we look at the stock market, it isn't suddenly that the stock market became enormously valuable, rallying from under 1,000 to more than 5,000 in the space of 8 weeks, but rather that we have hyperinflation, and that the stock market reflects the inflation rate. So when we think about the performance of stock markets in an inflationary environment, then the kinds of companies that should do well are those that can grow faster than the rate of inflation or raise their dividends faster than the rate of inflation, or both. And the stock market has plenty of those. So what it will contribute to is a rotation. But as long as we don't get a problem with debt, then or we don't see that yields are racing higher, then it's a manageable situation. But it is certainly something that we probably need to pay attention to because it's a change. It's something that's really quite different. And when we think about the long-term trend in US 10-year treasuries that have been trending lower for an awfully long time already, and the fact that you are moving towards single-person rule in China, which is one of the biggest holders of treasuries, that is setting up the, I think, a potential issue between the biggest debtor and the biggest creditor in the world. And these are nuclear powers, and it's not as if they've been on the friendliest of terms for all of their history. So when we look at this long-term chart of yields, it does look like they're going to push higher, and that is going to have an impact on risk assets, and particularly those that have been most heavily exposed to leverage. And I've gone over those kinds of shares previously, but it's particularly in the high yield sector. Now, the most important point, therefore, is that when we look at this high yield chart of spreads, then they're still inert. And as long as high yield spreads are inert, then there's probably not a great deal to worry about. But it is something that is worth keeping an eye on, because when it starts to trend higher, well, then that's a lead indicator for trouble in the stock market. And so far, we don't have that as a lead indicator. It's not moving higher. It's very inert. But eventually it will. And that's when we should really start to think about what is going on in the stock market. But it is something to keep an eye on rather than to panic about until we in fact have some sort of movement in it. And when we look at some of these high yield ETFs, well, then for example, the Spider High Yield Bond JNK ETF has unwound most of its oversold condition relative to the trend mean. But it's going to have difficulty pushing back above that trend mean. Just because we haven't had yields expanding in a dynamic manner does not mean that the high yield sector has suddenly turned into a value proposition. I think that's it's rather the opposite, in fact, and that this is a market that's probably going to be a sell on the rallies rather than a buy on the dip for the foreseeable future. And when we look at the oil price, oil is obviously still by far the most important of all commodities, and it continues to extend its bounce from that $60 area. That was a larger pullback than we've seen in any time since June, and it broke the short-term consistency of the trend. Now the bigger point is that it has bounced from $60, and it has this pullback has confirmed that there is resistance around 70. So we know there's a great deal of additional support becomes economic above $70, but the reality is that Saudi Arabia wants to massage prices higher, and so far they've been pretty successful. And if OPEC does not, or at least if they continue to abide by their commitment to reduce supply, and the global economy continues to expand, then that'll be a boon for domestic US production, but it could result in somewhat higher prices before significant additional sources of new supply come back into the market. But a lot of oil becomes economic at $70, which suggests to me that even if we do have somewhat higher prices, that the pace of the advance is going to be more volatile and it's going to be slower than we've seen from those lows back in the middle of 2017. But by and large, we are in an environment where the majority of markets are doing reasonably well. Now, one of the other things that I think people are starting to think about is what's going to happen with the Italian election. And the Italian bond yields are very inert. And part of the reason for that is because the ECB is buying them hand over fist. What this is contributing to is this very inert environment. It's almost manufactured just how inert these Italian government bond yields have been, and particularly when we look at what's been going on in German Bunds. And the Bund yield is coming down right now, but that was a pretty impressive expansion from 30 to 80 basis points in the space of about 8 weeks. And what this suggests is that yields have, in fact, that spreads have, in fact, compressed when we're looking at the Italian bond markets. And what that is very singularly saying is that the ECB is willing to stand behind both Spain and Italy in the event that there is an unruly outcome. So, against that background, what it suggests is that the ECB might be talking about removing its stimulus, but it's not in fact doing it. And they are still buying $30 billion worth of bonds per month at the moment. Now, the DAX has almost unwound its oversold condition relative to the trend mean, and it is going to have to push above that level to confirm a return to demand dominance. Then, when we spread the net a little bit wider and look at, for example, Latin America, then the Brazilian market was at another new high in here today, but did not quite hold it. So, it is really quite overextended relative to the trend mean, almost 12,500 points. So, the potential here for additional pause in consolidation cannot be, I think, completely omitted. Then, when we look at the Indian market, it has also been engaged in a process of mean reversion, but it was in positive territory in here today. Then, something that I look at on a daily basis is the second section in Japan, and it continues to bounce from this 7,000 area, and I find that quite encouraging that we may be seeing the end of this consolidation in Japan, and that the potential here is that we have seen the extent of the pullback both on the Nikkei and perhaps in the Topix Banks Index, which is also back in the region of its trend mean. And considering that when we look at the banks on a long-term basis, that they are not that far away today from where they were back in 2003. And they're among the cheapest financials in the world right now. With the potential for commodity price inflation to come back with a splash at some point this year, then the potential here for inflation to start becoming a meaningful consideration in Japan cannot be ruled out. And the potential for that to have an impact on the banking sector would suggest that this is a cheap asset and that there is significant potential for additional upside. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.